Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody. How are you doing today? This is a very special night for us today here in Peru. As you know, Inner Healers is an integrative, health-oriented concept that considers all the answers that we look for reside inside. It is by reaching inside that we can live healthy, happy lives. Those who resonate with this concept are writing back and contacting each other, with whom we're starting a loving and caring worldwide connected soul. A company under the same name was created in Peru to help sustain both the concept and the community. We believe in broadening minds and lessening frontiers, For it's not about where we are based, but about remembering we are all inner healers. This is the way in which we've started also the radio show you are listening to today. This radio show will help us shine our lights all around with all the people that are listening today. Our very special guest for today is Isha Lerner. She will be talking to us about archetypal types and abundance. Isha Lerner is an astrologer, scholar, and flower essence practitioner and owner of Flowers Essence Company. She has lectured internationally and is well known for her expertise and research into fairy tale mythology, the study of archetypes, her karmic imprint, and past life astrological counseling known as power mapping, and the symbolic association of the human soul and nature. She includes the application of flower essences and vibrational healing into her work with clients. An acclaimed international author, Isha Lerner co-authored the best-selling Inner Child Cards, a fairy tale tarot, published in 1993. She has also written the Triple Goddess Tarot and the Tarot of the Four Elements. All of these you can purchase both at her website and through Amazon. So, I'm Isha tonight. Hello, Isha.
Hello.
Hi, dear. How are you? It's so nice to finally be able to listen to you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and it's really nice to hear your show and to finally have a chance to speak with you as well.
Yes. So could you please tell us a little bit about yourself? How come you decided to start on this path? And how come you decided to start studying all about archetypes?
Well, I think as all of us know, being on a spiritual path and choosing actually to live a more conscious life requires a certain amount of focus and a certain amount of dedication to a higher principle. And I think the study of archetype lends that opportunity to us, those of us who are looking to strive and become more productive and more illumined in our own personal life. We look to the prototypes of images and saints and heroes and heroines that inspire us that we might aspire toward.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to start learning about archetypes, and you also made this wonderful tarot deck, right?
Right. It was one of those situations of loving the tarot and, of course, loving the images and, again, the archetypes in the tarot deck, finding the mirror of those pictures and images to, in a sense, inspire the pictures and the images and possibilities within myself, and also with clients to see how pictures and images and stories inspire and illumine imagination within ourselves and others. It was such a deep interest of mine that I eventually moved into the area of writing and teaching tarot, and eventually creating some of my own tarot decks from the areas of life that are most pertinent to my own life work and destiny and spiritual values.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you describe an archetype to be? What is it for all the people who are listening and who might not be who might not know exactly what an archetype is?
Right. Yeah. There's different definitions for archetype. I think on a broad scale, especially in the field of psychology and spirituality, archetype comes from Jungian work, and Carl Jung, of course, who was the psychologist from Switzerland, and most people know of his work, coined the term. He didn't coin the term, but he used it widely in his work, and he described an archetype as an inherited pattern of thought or symbolic imagery derived from the past collective experience and present in the individual unconscious. And so basically what he's saying there is an archetypal pattern is something that is held within a collective forum. Again, an example would be Mother Mary or perhaps Jesus, perhaps Kuan Yin, some higher beautiful icon of great inspiration. And that inherited pattern of thought or imagery is held in the collective and living somewhere within our own present individual unconscious. And we pull from that as a means to inspire and to thrive and to pull down, hopefully, those qualities, living within that archetypal collective consciousness that may improve or, as I had mentioned, inspire our own life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say a more simplified definition of archetype would be an original model or type after which other similar things are patterned, or a prototype. So you can see, you know, there in a sense a kind of image or imagery that gets repeated over and over, thus a prototype.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this imagery, this pattern, like, for example, Mother Mary or Kuan Yin or the ones you mentioned, those kind of represent our light, as Jung would call it, you know, the nice part of us. What about the shadow part of us? Are there also archetypes for that?
Oh, absolutely, and that's a wonderful point, because the beauty, of course, of Carl Jung's work, or in shamanic work, as you know, is allowing us to become whole and full, which does not negate the shadow aspect, the dark and the light, balancing and unifying within the individual. Therefore, shadow archetypes, of course, then would be Hades, or might be the devil, you know, or might be skeletons or ghosts. Or not necessarily ghosts, but anything that we carry as a collective that seems frightening, or in some way, Persephone herself may be a shadow archetype, one who was abducted into the underworld, but then transforms. And so part of the collective work, I would say, in a healing perspective with shadow work, would be to own the shadow or to meet the shadow, and then seek to transform its limitation or its fearful aspect that might hold back self-love or courage or self-confidence or even one's own healing process.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, for example, the handman or the death would actually mean an opportunity for the person to evolve from the shadow to the light. Could that be?
Absolutely. I think that's beautifully said. You know, and when I work with the tarot and I'm working with a client, what you just said reminded me of this. I like to mention to the client that the tarot holds a lot of shadow around it collectively that has been built up through history, but actually offers a distortion in a sense of, you know, various images and archetypes that create our whole being. And so when I begin working with tarot with a client, I like to mention that piece so that we can, in a sense, meet whatever aspect of shadow may arise for the betterment and the attunement of one's goodwill. And that there is, you know, there isn't a bad card or there isn't really a scary card, like one might think, like, oh, I hope I don't get the death card or I hope I don't get the devil card. But they're just pictures of something lying latent within the soul's territory, waiting for a chance to be recognized and healed.
Right, that's very important, right? Because everything that the shadow wants to bring into the light means that there's a healing process that needs to take place within the person, right?
I think so. How about yourself? Have you worked with tarot yourself?
Well, I used to work with tarot when I was very young. Actually, I started my healing path by studying since I was like 7 years old or something. So
I started to study,
you know, the tarot and the chakras and everything that had to do with healing from a, you know, a spiritual point since I was very, very little. But it was not until I was an adult and I had already worked through myself through 13 years in international relations, and my father had died in my arms, that I understood that my role had to be offering healing not only for myself but offering it to other people who might need it.
Right.
So that's when my my, you know, the path that I'm in now started, you know. So
yeah.
But also, I mean, I don't have that much experience with tarot. I just have a little experience on it.
Yes, but it sounds like you have such a beautiful understanding of the of archetype and the power of imagery and the messages, or you might say the images that come through tarot as a means to bring forward, you know, the unconscious as an opportunity to heal. And you know, it's fascinating to hear your story as well, what you're doing.
Yeah. It's interesting because it led me to create this concept, which is called Inner Healer,
yeah.
And which I've been, you know, holding since 2005 when I accidentally started to work with my first client, and then I started integrating everything that I had been not only reading but applying on myself. You know,
right.
I had my own you know, healing story before I could start helping other people. So I just started to share everything that I learned to help myself, my family, my friends, with other people who might need it. So so I got into a little bit on archetypes and, you know, goddesses. I actually love your deck. I really love them, you know.
Thank you so much. You know, what you're saying is, I think, so important and beautiful to share the camaraderie with you. My company has just merged with a company called Inner Sight, and we are in the process of bringing a collective website together that is Inner Sight Isha Lerner Enterprise, really calling upon that part of the deep soul work that we're doing individually as a means to prepare and also inspire the changes that are coming in the world and that are present in the world. And and as you're saying, it's so important for everybody, I think, to fully grasp the importance of the inner work that's required to become a conscious human being and a harmonious human being. And yeah, I think that's a lot of what archetype offers to us, and a lot of what the, you might say, the stirring of the imagination within, that we can actually conjure such unfathomable opportunities that are shown to us through the pictures and the images, and find it within ourselves to kind of metaphorically live those out, meet them, and reach for a collective unity of harmony and peace, love, of course, being the overriding principle in all of this work that we do.
No, I think it's very important what you just said, because it's like the time has come for everybody to start listening inside. So I'm very happy to hear that your company is merging with this big company that really has to do with helping more and more people get inside.
Right. Yes, it's a theme whose time has come, I think, you know, that that we move into you know, recognition of the importance of this inner sight. And one of our very beautiful company members, Janet, brought forward this along with two other company members, Doug and Tara, the name Inner Sight, and they, you know, have, I feel, really tapped into a deeper need of collective hunger, I'd say, for this type of reprieve, offering an individual to take time to find the resource within that is a guiding light from within that that heals ego and is a prominent force to build conscious relationship in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a big theme for, I think, for the world today and for our companies, yours including ours. And it's very exciting to connect with you via long-distance radio to share these higher ideals.
Yes, I guess it's nice, you know, to receive a call from the inside and then honor it. You know, I think that's something that we're doing tonight. We're honoring the call that somehow all of us have received. And thanks, you know, for all the opportunities that we have, the services that we have, like internet, we can communicate each other and also, you know, like unite our lights so that more people can take advantage and can share with us. Thanks to, you know, to having this internet and having being able to have this radio conversation. So to center ourselves a little bit more on our topic for today. This will be our last show in abundance, which is the topic for the month we're working on since we started November. And would you say there are specific archetypes for abundance?
Absolutely. It's a, you know, archetype and abundance together, just kind of delicious, you know, two beautiful words that I feel we all want to find more resource for. So abundance itself, you know, is of course such a key element that allows each individual, in a sense, to have their own personal relationship with abundance, and of course varying relationships dependent upon a person's willingness to receive and also to give. So it's a very, you know, it's a very powerful word. It's a very powerful concept. And we're all, I think, those of us who are walking a path of self-worth and self-enlightenment and inner sight and inner healing are seeking this abundance and seeking to share abundance with the world. So there are a couple of archetypes that I feel are beautiful, beautifully connected to abundance. One of them is found in our inner child card deck. The inner child cards, of course, being the tarot deck that was created by myself and Mark Lerner, that connects fairy tales with the major arcana and also connects kind of myths and fables of childhood lore with the, you might say, more sophisticated adult interpretation of the tarot. And the Queen of Hearts in traditional tarot was made to be Saint Nicholas in our tarot deck. Now, Saint Nicholas may be referred to, may be associated primarily with Christmas for in more of a Christian theme. However, Saint Nicholas predates Christmas, so to speak, and sort of finds himself somewhat associated with Christmas because of the bearing of great gifts and compassion and generosity that St. Nicholas carried. Ultimately, St. Nicholas had many names before he was actually called St. Nicholas, and basically from the Scandinavian folkloric mythology comes Santa Claus, K-L-A-U-S, and many other versions of St. Nicholas who morphed into many different, archetypes. But yes, I think St. Nicholas makes a very beautiful archetype because of, even if we look at it from the standpoint of Christmas, for those who perhaps we can see it beyond the Christian Christmas motif, and just think of this character, Santa Claus, who has a huge bag of gifts on his back, flying through the sky to bring gifts and happiness to families around the globe. And this type of generosity and ultimately the beauty of the Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus archetype also carries with it faith and believing in, you know, and the idea that I believe in this abundance and I have faith that my dreams will come true, so to speak. Looking at that from a simplistic level and bringing that to a larger picture, it puts together certain components, I think, that accompany abundance: faith, belief, believing in, generosity, the spirit of goodness, compassion, you know, all of those very important elements that that morph into the word abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one that comes to mind. And, of course, one could certainly put the Buddha, you know, the laughing Buddha, especially the Potai, the Buddha with the big belly and arms held up over the head with that wonderful laugh on his face. And this mm-hmm. was the Buddha of abundance. And, you know, that archetype is very important in Japan and also China, that there's this being of light and joy, that if you rub his belly, good luck will come your way. And his big belly represents abundance. You know, in a sense, the whole world is held within that, you know, big belly, and represents fertility and, you know, the seed of potential and this sort of thing. So those are two that come to my mind.
Yes, and is there any card that would represent abundance on your Avritu deck, on your goddess deck, and your flowers deck?
In the power flower deck, you say?
Yes, and on the goddess deck as well.
Yeah, well, in the power flower deck, that would be Potai. We do have the laughing Buddha as an archetype in the power flower deck. He's connected to zinnia, the flower zinnia. And zinnia is a sunshine flower that heralds itself toward the light and abundantly grows upward, has many, many colors, and in a sense, it's part of the daisy family, and therefore it also holds the potential for greater focus. And for the zinnia, it's greater focus for happiness and abundance and, again, generosity and good feelings inside. So the Laughing Buddha is connected to the zinnia in the Power of Flower book deck set. We've accompanied an archetype with a flower, 32 flowers, and its primary archetype and healing properties as a means to understand not only the healing properties of flowers, but also the flower essence itself, and, you know, what the flower essence or the flower's healing properties can offer the human soul as a means to heal and prosper within. And so that's that deck. With the Triple Goddess Tarot, one card that comes to my mind is, with the abundance factor, would be the Wheel of Fortune, I think. You know, the Wheel of Fortune in the Tarot is a card that I think is very much connected to abundance. It's connected to the planet Jupiter, and it's the number 10 card in the Tarot. And so, you know, the Wheel of Fortune has a very nice message that also gives us a little bit of a warning about abundance as well. That is discrimination and focus is also a very important aspect of our abundant nature. So the Wheel of Fortune can come up and be a warning, or it can be a sign of, always a sign of opportunity. But you know the old adage, be careful what you wish for. And the Wheel of Fortune card can sometimes offer that, like, oh, there's so much abundance, but you don't want to get distracted by too much abundance, meaning over sort of the conveyor belt that's going by you and you think you have to take everything on it. There's certain discriminating factors that also tie into becoming, I think, effectively abundant. Mm-hmm. And so the Wheel of Fortune is one of the archetypes, or one of the cards. And in the Triple Goddess Tarot, she's connected, it's the goddess of the goddess of fortune and the goddess of opportunity. And she's depicted as a beautiful goddess sitting in a lotus position. And there's beautiful, radiant kind of rainbow arch around her, representing, again, the wheel of opportunity. And her, the you might say the yoni area of the female is a papaya. And it's the papaya represents has many seeds, but also papaya helps us digest. And so the energy there is, there's this Wheel of Fortune around you, that how do we digest this opportunity? And yet within, of course, these opportunities are many, many seeds of potential. And so it's a matter of knowing that our body holds these seeds of potential, and that our goal then, if we're to prosper, become abundant, is to learn how to digest, in a sense, our experiences and to focus as we move forward and create further abundance with guidelines. But, you know, it reminds me of the World card of the Tarot, which, in a sense, is, you know, the blissful goddess, and she's dancing freely, but she's centered between the four fixed signs of the zodiac, which represent form. So the World card in itself is freedom and form. And she's ultimately abundant. This is the apex of the Tarot journey of the Major Arcana. Card 21, number 3, 2 plus 1 is 3, the ultimate goddess energy. But she must have, in order to be constructive, practical, and productive on Earth, she has to find her form. And again, to me, this is another aspect of abundance.
Mm-hmm. So while you were talking, there were so many images coming through. The first had to do with Jupiter. You mentioned Jupiter, and usually Jupiter has to do with our good luck, right? With with having help whenever we think that we're not going to make it, or finding something that we didn't even know we were going to need afterwards. It usually has to do with receiving help from where we do not exist. So it has to do with good luck. But luck's also associated with our capacity to do something because we prepared for the opportunity beforehand.
Right.
And you also mentioned that we have to keep ourselves centered through our abundance path. And it also reminds me of, you know, Jupiter people tend to trip on their toes or to get hit on the head, you know, because they're not looking in front of them. So they usually get hit against something or fall down or something like that. So you actually made me laugh when you were talking about Jupiter having to do with a fortune wheel, because
uh-huh.
it's like very you pictured it very well.
Mhm. Yeah, it's
and
so interesting.
And then you were also talking about the papaya having to do with our ability to digest the things that we live day to day, and it reminds me of the yellow center, you know, the solar plexus center. It has to do with our ability to experience our ego without fear. I mean, with having to experience our utmost capacity for doing things, for doing the things that we're meant to do while here. So that
right.
caught my attention as well.
Oh, that's really nice. I love what you're sharing. Hmm.
That's very, very interesting what you're saying. So what would you say is abundance for you? How would you describe it?
For myself, my own life?
Yeah, what's it for you?
Right. Oh, it's such a loaded question. I guess ultimately abundance would be self-love. I'd say part of my thriving in life, my highest ideal would be that I loved myself so much that I could be eternally abundant with goodwill and love for the world around me. So first, abundance for me means love, I think.
That's very nice. So you mean love for yourself or universal love, or what kind of love are you talking about?
Well, I think first, finding enough courage to love all parts of myself, and in doing so, I can love all parts of another. And if I can't find that love for myself abundantly, I may not be able to love you as abundantly. So mm-hmm. I think that piece needs to come first, which again ties into our common theme of inner sight and inner healing. Then I think we attract. It seems as though abundance is a kind of magnetism of sorts, that if we have faith and if we have that sense of worth within ourselves, then good things come, or say good things. I don't mean to, that we draw to ourselves that which will benefit our life. And to me, this would be goodwill, good luck, like you were saying, good intention. If we're, looking at the different facets of abundance, I think, for me, it would be first self-love.
That's very interesting. So if abundance is something so good for us, why would you consider that there's not so many people living in abundance in our day-to-day?
So many people, I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, if abundance is so something so good for us, why would you say that there are not many people living in abundance nowadays?
Living in abundance?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say that the material world has become a destructive force, to the extent that if we attach abundance to that which we have versus who we are, I think we develop more of a sense of lack. And my feeling is that the world around us defines abundance as what we have, or what my neighbor has, or what the world says I need to have in order to be successful, look successful, or have self-worth, because I have these things, or I have money. First, I think there's a healing that we, in our inner healing and our inner sight, I think we first come to understand that, I guess it's understanding the illusion, and then at the same time honoring the beauty and the embodiment of the manifestation of health and wealth and goodwill as a beautiful, fortunate opportunity to enjoy our life.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you say
tarot cards, or how would you say that the different kinds of archetypes that we have around can help us experience abundance?
I think people need mirrors. We learn from one another. We learn from stories. We learn when we go to a museum and walk through a beautiful room full of paintings that somebody has taken the time to create an image that actually moves us. And it moves us in a direction, depending upon how we look at it and who the person is. But something moves us. Something transforms us. Pictures allow us to see ourselves, whether we like the picture or we don't like the picture, or there's something in it that gives us a mirror of, again, something that lives within us. I think the tarot is that way. It's sort of like a little museum of sorts. You know, it's a school. It's its own little teaching. It's a tremendous body of wisdom that has manifested in picture form over centuries. And this is what we, you know, are able to glean certain, as they say, as we're talking about archetypes and pictures of ourselves, the more we learn about our inner life, the more abundant we can become. I believe that that is true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe that too. I think we have a call, an online call right now. Would you like to take it now?
Oh, sure.
Okay, let's just see. Hello? 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 Okay, sounds like this person is not on air. Poor person, he has been waiting for us for about 5 minutes, but let's give it a try in 10 more minutes from here. So getting to what we were talking about, do you think there's a practical route for us to experience abundance?
A practical route. I like the word practical a lot. So I appreciate the question. I think a lot of people forget to take the practical route or route. The practical route to abundance, I would say, is seeing everything that you do every day as a gift. And that would be gardening or washing your dishes, praying, working with your clients. It's all part of the daily work and gift of being embodied and enjoying the virtues of life on earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that that's a very important word in my vocabulary, is making it practical and not ineffable or untouchable. And so on a practical level, the route to abundance would be living your life as if every moment is a gift, no matter what you're doing.
That's very interesting. So do you think that abundance is something that we can measure? How can we measure it?
I think that's a really good question. It's a provocative question. Don't you think? I don't know. I mean, I think abundance is an energy, and can we measure energy? Seems like it's infinite in its potential, and so immeasurable.
Mm-hmm. But can we measure it in our lives?
I think that's personal for every person. Some people would be a millionaire or a multimillionaire and not feel abundant. And then there would be the person who may live in India or a third world country with a very little money but may feel like the most abundant person on earth. So I think it depends on a person's upbringing, personal choice. It's not always a choice, I don't think. Sometimes it's an energy. I think people measure abundance differently. Some people, I mean, of course, we all know some people measure abundance by how much money you have. But those of us who see through this illusion, we understand that money cannot buy happiness. It never has. It never will. But yet, money is also a gift. Recently saw an interview with Oprah Winfrey and J.K. Rowling, from the woman who wrote the Harry Potter books.
Mm-hmm.
It was two billionaire women who are billionaires, talking about what abundance means to them. It was a very interesting interview. And J.K. Rowling, who now is, you know, a billionaire, started out in poverty, still worries about money, and said very, very clearly, for anyone who thinks money solves your problems, it frees you. It can free you. So abundance and money can mean freedom to make choices that perhaps you can't make if you don't have the money on a mundane level. But on the other hand, if we're speaking of inner work, inner healing, and inner sight, then again, abundance is going to mean something different to each person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's part of the individual soul work of every human being to work with the issue of abundance as part of their whole karmic package.
Mm-hmm. Does karma play a role in archetypes?
Does karma play a role?
Yes, in archetypes and tarot.
Well, again, archetype is not something that we... Let's see, how can I... Does karma play a role in archetype? There are archetypes, I think, that represent different karmic conditions that we may be journeying through at different times in our life. So there may be a particular archetype that we're drawn to or that we need to embody as a means of a karmic condition that we're working through. So to me, that makes sense, but I'm not sure any other way to think of it at this time.
Mm-hmm. No, but you did answer the question. So can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, the three decks that we've been talking about, and how can they practically help people experience abundance while using them?
And I'm sorry, what was the first part of the question? It's a little fuzziness in our connection. So I missed the first few lines of your, few words of your question.
Yes, it happens sometimes, I'm sorry. I was saying, how the three decks we've been talking about, the three decks that you offer, can help people claim their abundance? How can they help people while using them choose specific paths, or what's the practical use of tarot in our life? What could it be for people who might be interested in buying them, for listeners who might be interested in maybe even learning about tarot for their own personal path?
Right. Oh, gosh. I think for the purposes already discussed, that choosing a deck that resonates with where you are at your life at a particular time, or resonates with your soul force. The pictures being a very important aspect of the deck we choose, like how those images are illustrated or projected through that particular deck, I think can lend great meaning to an individual. So if you have a tarot deck that you feel very much connected to, in a sense, a tarot deck can become an ally. It becomes like a friend. And if you know you have a trustworthy friend, or you might say a guidance that you can rely on, then I think that brings about its own form of abundance and goodwill in one's life. Knowing that you have a 78 pack of pictures that are your friend, that if you've got an issue and you want to inquire wisdom, you need wisdom or guidance, I think that having the tarot there as one of the tools, just one tool, there's many, many tools, and the tool is the means toward greater inner sight and inner healing. We use the tarot as an intermediary between, you might say, conflict and resolution. And if we have a mediary between conflict and resolution, we are serving the world and creating abundance. Because again, in my definition, abundance is love. So tarot is an aspect of a way in which I have enriched my life by consulting the tarot as my ally, as my friend. I don't know if that answers your question.
It definitely does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I'm really myself. More get back to my tarot studying. one last question. How come you decided to make your tarot decks? You know, the one on the inner child, the one on the goddess, the one that has to do with flower essences. How come you decided to actually make them up?
Right. Each one was created at a different interval of my life. And the inner child cards came as an inspiration. I would witness that many people had reservations about using tarot, or in some way felt, again, somewhat frightened or turned off by the imagery of traditional tarot. So this was back in the late 1980s, and I had two small children, and they loved the images of tarot, and they were intrigued by the fact that their mother played with these cards and let them play with them. but some of the images seemed a little over the top for them or a little bit frightening. It just felt really good to me to create a deck that could be held in the hands of all, children and adults alike, that still could carry the meaning and the integrity of Tarot. And as that idea began to shape itself within me, Mark Lerner and I began to accompany a Tarot major arcana card with a fairy tale, and this magical thing started to happen. We began to see how the fairy tale itself, within one fairy tale theme, the whole major arcana is seen as a hero's journey. So that, in a sense, in the fairy tale, the major arcana is played out. And the whole study of fairy tale became fascinating to me. And the Tarot deck emerged out of this research of fairy tale, the mystical meaning of fairy tale, and the hero's journey. And, of course, the ideal was to have cards that were holding the integrity of Tarot, but were beautiful and light-filled, so that they could introduce the Tarot to the world in a new way. And that was exciting to me.
It sounds like really, really fun. So you mean the hero's journey, like in Campbell's hero's journey? In Joseph Campbell's hero's journey?
Yes, right. You know, the hero's journey, beginning as the orphan, moving through the various vagaries of life, you know, and the hero's journey is seen in the fairy tale as well, as is the entire journey through the, you might say, the evolutionary road to consciousness that the major arcana leads us through. You move from orphan to embodiment to individuation, obstacles, initiations, ultimate meeting of the shadow, liberations, rebirth, enlightenment, revelation, you know, which leads us ultimately to the castle of our own soul, personal individuation and enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. And how do minor arcana play a role in that time?
How does the minor arcana?
Yes, complement the major arcana in your deck.
That's such a good question. The major arcana is known as the greater mysteries. The minor arcana is known as the lesser mysteries, meaning that basically the minor arcana are the experiences that we have in our daily life, and their numerical value offer us clues and indications as to what level of experience we are engaging. And so the minor arcana are basically what we're doing. The major arcana are more of a spiritual message on a soul level. They, again, are the archetypes. The minor arcana are how we're living through the archetype. And the court cards represent the person, or the people in your life, or a very important mirroring of the way you see yourself.
That's very interesting. And how does that work in the goddess deck?
Yeah, the goddess deck was illustrated by Mara Friedman. Tara McKinney co-wrote the Triple Goddess Tarot with me. And it was when I was really exploring the dimensions of the feminine consciousness and how I was also implementing at the time the karmic imprint work and the power mapping in my life to create a deck that was primarily major arcana. But what we did is we added cards. We took the liberty to take the beautiful dancing goddess as number 21, the world card. We took the liberty to advance her beyond now her point of exaltation, what do we do as the goddess once we have reached an exalted point of embodiment? You see, this is where we felt this excitement about, let's move her on her journey. So we brought in four new cards called infinite bliss, infinite truth, infinite possibilities, and infinite, anyway, it's on the top of my head. We brought these steps of the exalted goddess forward so that we ourselves could step into that infinite bliss and infinite truth and live in our daily life the beautiful principles of joy that the World card represents. And because the World card traditionally has the feminine dancing at the center, she's in a sense the triune, the triple goddess Tarot, the embodiment of maiden, mother, crone, the triangle, the trinity, the harmony of that which is not gender related, in the sense of whether we're a male or a female in this life, we still embody the principle of that creativity, the creative joy that the divine feminine represents. So the triple goddess Tarot isn't just for women, it's for men too. And it's about the divine consciousness of creativity and contacting and reestablishing a rapport with the divine feminine that has been so mutated throughout the centuries. And with the triple goddess Tarot, we created seven chakra cards so that we could align those archetypes and those images with our own body. Where does she live within me? Or how may I access a part of my own healing and my own health as I work through the potentials, you know, the possibilities of what these cards can offer? So that was that deck. And then the Power of Flower cards originated from my deep, deep passion with the flower essences. I've been working with the flower essences since 1976, and they've been a huge part of my practice as an astrologer with clients, and eventually began to create my own flower essence line. And from this work and joy of working with flowers and archetype, I put them together to create the Power of Flower healing deck.
Mm-hmm. How does that help people?
Very similar to Tarot. You know, it's divination. It's also the same idea. I have a variety of layouts that one can choose from in the book. There's instruction of, if one chooses to read about how to use the cards. There's a lot written in the book that accompanies the deck about oracular consciousness, energy healing, and the empowerment of the natural world, being in harmony with nature. And when our body is in harmony with nature, our peace of mind and our ability to function in the world at large, I think, is enhanced. And flower essences help us with this. And flower essences, if you choose a flower of power card, it can give you a little, again, mirror. This flower is speaking to you today. This flower, you might take this as a flower essence today, or you may just think about this flower and the archetype that accompanies the flower, just as you would one of the Tarot cards.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting as well. And it sounds like fun as well, you know, creating them. And you know, the process that you might have gone through while creating each of them.
Oh, it was an absolute joy creating each one. It was a collaboration with an artist. It was an opportunity to, in a sense, have a partnership for a bit of time with an artist, with, you know, the opportunity to share imagery and pictures and ideas, to, you know, open the intuitive door and allow messages and inspirations to come through. It's a very exciting process.
Mm-hmm. Somebody has wrote on the chat board, and he says that he really liked the tapestries that he used. He says they're very beautiful tapestry. And he also says that too many people fear the castle and the devil card and the death card, but he likes that we've talked about it, saying that it all has to do with change and transformation.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that it is so important to thank you to her for writing in on the chat board. And, you know, we do need more of this together as a collective, understanding the value of embracing shadow and the value of not only the value, but the activation of personal will on a higher level, in a sense, to be willing to go through that transformation so that one can truly be free. And it's a whole lifetime process, as we know, but such a glorious one if we're willing to take that path.
Mm-hmm. So my last question for today would be, which archetype or archetypes would you say are the shadow for abundance?
That's a good question. Probably the devil.
Mm-hmm.
I think the devil archetype, to me, represents limitation. And the devil card itself represents what we might be attached to or chained to or anchored to that limits us, represses us, oppresses us, condemns us, shames us, makes us feel guilty, disallows us to be independent and brilliant and different. So anything that limits us, a limiting factor, the devil card comes to mind, because when that card shows up, I generally feel, you know, that its message is limitation, and which is the
mm-hmm.
shadow of abundance.
Mm-hmm. And which would that be on your deck?
That's a good question. In the inner child cards, that would be the Big Bad Wolf. And Little Red Riding Hood, also known as Little Red Cap, must meet the Big Bad Wolf 3 times. Number 3 is also a really important number in mystical fairy tale. It's the number of the goddess, but it's also the number of transformation. Usually in fairy tales, you'll find there's 3 wishes or 3 sisters or 3 tasks to be done. So 3 is a very important number. And by the 3rd time, we usually succeed. And Little Red Riding Hood had to meet the Big Bad Wolf as an aspect of her growth to free herself, in a sense, from her own, you might say, ignorance or naivete. It was a process of individuation. And but still, the Big Bad Wolf served as a fearful factor, you know, a limiting factor for her, and lurked, you know, sort of lurked. And she was tempted by the beautiful flowers. She's the only, Little Red Riding Hood is the only heroine in modern fairy tale lore who actually had a loving mother alive and protective. Usually you have the mother had died, was wicked, in some way represents, this is a whole other topic, but I just wanted to say that Little Red Cap walks out the door and the mother is embracing her, saying, do not walk off the path. Now, that is the message for all of us. We have to walk off the path. We have to venture outside the lines of mediocrity or safety at times in order to find our own individuation and brilliance and genius. And when we do, we often meet the shadow. And that's what happens in the story, and that's why we've called the devil card in the inner child cards the big bad wolf.
That's beautiful. And what about the deck on the goddess?
That one is called karmic imprint, interestingly enough, because the shadow that we are, it's sort of like our birth shadow, karma. And there's a picture of a woman encased in kind of an egg, and she's held in. And all around that is sort of like autumn leaves showing the transformational season of change and letting go. And so in a sense, in the Triple Goddess Tarot, it's called karmic imprint, and ultimately speaks about the freedom and the need to move beyond the limitation of a karmic imprint that is present in our life as a means to liberate and free us and further our journey with greater consciousness and joy.
Mm-hmm. What about the flower deck?
The flower deck doesn't really have, as I say, the actual archetypes. But I'd say that as a shadow aspect, probably Black Cohosh, which would be Kali, the Kali Ma. She's, you know, the Black Cohosh is the flower of transformation. It has its gnarly roots that... of course, Cohosh is used for birth and menopause and transformational phases in our life. And its root is very kind of gnarly and kind of scary looking. But outside of this gnarly rooted tuber comes this beautiful white flower. And so in a sense, it's kind of like us. You know, out of this dark place comes this white, pure part. And that's the transformational aspect. A Black Cohosh brings us through the transformation. It assists us as we move through move through difficult times in our lives so that we may let go. And that's what Cohosh does in birth. Black Cohosh helps the woman let go. Oh, it works with the cervix, works with the vaginal muscles, works with the hormones so that one can either birth freely or birth themselves freely through menopause. And I think Kali Ma is a beautiful representation of that process, and she's scary, but she's brilliantly, ferociously loving and guides us and watches us through our transformations.
Very interesting as well. For all the listeners that would like to acquire this deck, you can click on either of the images that you'll see on our Blog Talk Radio show front page. If you the images of the three decks, and you can click on each of them, and you will be redirected to Amazon's webpage where you can purchase any of the ones you like, or the three of them. I guess, Isha, that will be all for today because we are running late with our show.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, we already complied with our 60 minutes. I guess we will have to stop here. It has been a real pleasure to have you with us. I'm very, very happy and very honored to to have been able to listen to you sharing all your wisdom and everything you know about archetypes in relation to abundance, which is the topic for us this month. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and thank you for all the people that are part of our Inner Healers community, because it has been a really, really nice evening with you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you. It's been really wonderful.
Thank you. Be kind of your way.
Love
you.
Bye-bye. Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.